But sisters, this is your one, your only life. And if we miss each other this time, who knows if we shall be given another chance. This is my life that I read to you from these pages. This is my woman's pain, my woman's joy. And if you turn away without having listened, how will we ever, ever touch? Sisters, it is our lives I am talking about. Not something removed, remote, known as art. I am not asking you for aesthetic judgments. Sisters, this is the only life I am sure of, and it is not different than yours. I am trying to speak your visions, your truth. Sisters, we may be dead before we meet again in this, our one, our only life. This is a poem I wrote to commemorate a trip I took to Africa to see a solar eclipse, and I wanted to convey the awesomeness and the religiousness of that experience. It's called The Ancient Goddess. It was said by the people of Mauritania. It was spoken from one to another as they saw us descend from the sky with our instruments, all come to the desert in her heat to watch the sun go black on a certain day at a certain hour. The Mauritanians turned to each other and said, "Who can know when Allah will decide to snatch the sun from the sky?" But the sky was indeed made dark on the appointed day at the appointed hour. For Allah, in his burning masculine aspect, is too modern a god for such an ancient mystery. It is Ishtar, Isis, Sibel, virgin, mother, moon goddess, she who permits herself to be measured, for her character is cyclicity. It is not Allah, but she, who comes to vanquish the sun. Next are a group of new poems I've written in the last couple weeks or so. In China, they bound the feet of the women so that they could not go far or fast. They twisted the toes under so that the nails, if they grew at all, would grow into the flesh of the foot. In China, they bound the feet of the women and called them who were the most deformed, the least able to move, the most beautiful, the most feminine. In China, they bound the feet of the women and called it a high civilization. These next poems are from a series of poems, manifesto poems. This number is 12. I am a righteous bitch. I am vengeful, vindictive, vituperative, vinegar, sour, intent upon revenge. I am a righteous bitch. I am the woman who never turns the other cheek. I am the woman who does not forget or forgive or forswear vengeance. I am a righteous bitch, and it is no accident that I find myself in this place and time. I am a child of this country, this century. I am a 20th century American woman, and living in the belly of the beast, I have become a righteous bitch. The same series, this is number 21. You call me a violent woman, and I tell you I live in a world with such violence in it that it is impossible to imagine what peace is. You call me an angry woman, and I tell you I live in a world where choices are anger or numbness, a world that so enrages my soul that I shake with the breath and the depth of my madness. It is not so much that I hate men, but rather that I passionately love their victims and desire with all my soul the freedom of women from the rule of mankind, the revenge of earth upon the hunter, the despoiler, the men who kill for sport. Your worst fantasies about me are probably tame compared to the diabolical deeds I have either already done or am contemplating doing or have discarded as too tame to be worthy of my witchy nature. So go ahead, call me a violent, angry woman. I am a woman creating her own reality. And this is number 26, it's subtitled Revolutionary Poet. I am not only poet, I am a revolutionary and a dreamer, a seeker, a speaker of visions. I am not only rebel, I am a word spinner, one who cries out in anguish and joy. I am the idealist who, living in the material world, plunges headfirst into the thick of battle. I am the schemer, the warrior, the diabolical woman who dances in ocean waves and dreams of a world without fear. These next two poems are poems that I wrote on assignment, which I have never done before. It worked out real well, so I'm now advocating writing poems on assignment. The first one is called A Fat Woman. They call me a fat woman, chubby, overweight. They say I'm too big, accuse me of taking up too much space, more space than I'm entitled to. They tell me I should lose weight, reduce myself, shrink myself down to a more manageable size, like size 12 maybe, or size 10. I enjoy being out of bounds, extra large, overweight. I enjoy being fat as I enjoy being female. Ain't nobody gonna cut me down to size. And in the same vein, this one is just called Fat. Fat is a word that strikes terror in the hearts of women, like the word whore or the word dyke. Fat is a word that indicates male disapproval. It's a word that implies you're not pleasing to men. Fat is a word that means, watch it, girl, you're stepping out of line. We must begin the business of the women's revolution by taking the words that men use to keep us down, by taking these words like dyke and whore and fat, and stripping them of their power to hurt us. After all, fat is just a word. Okay. I don't always take myself that seriously. Here's a poem about not taking myself that seriously. I love poems with longer titles than the poem also. This is called The Contradictions of Living Under Advanced Capitalism, or How Can I Get Along Without My Things? I am no primordial woman, but rather a child of the 20th century, grown used to cities, accustomed to walking on sidewalks, dodging through traffic, turning a knob for water or heat. I would not know how to get along in the country, would not know which herbs healed, which poisonous. And so, perhaps when I speak of getting away from it all, maybe it's just a game. And when I speak of going back to the land, my words may be empty. Tell me, my sisters, I need to know, how will we survive in our agrarian matriarchy? How can I ever get along without my things? This is a poem about the taking of life and all the ramifications of that, from vegetarianism to Vietnam War. And that's, you know, that whole continuum there is one which this is written a couple years ago, and I no longer am at this point morally, but I'm still, you know, real in flux where I am on a continuum. The poem is called Shark. It was no fish that came up with his line. It was a baby shark. Its mindless bloodlust mirrored in the fisherman's smile, the rictus of death. The fisherman laughed, trying to make a joke to cover the silence. He saw the horror in my eyes. He looked away. His son-in-law said, "Sharks are no good anyway." The creature writhed in the sand, its death dance accompanied by the pulsing of tide. I said to myself, the nervous system of sharks is too primitive to experience pain as we know it. It does not suffer as I would suffer. My lover broke the accusation of silence with nervous words. He would have avoided it if he could. My family eats what he catches, but not sharks, I said. He couldn't help it, the voice continued. He has worked 45 years at a job he hates, and this is his only form of enjoyment. In my mind were the cars of the autumn of my Michigan childhood, covered with the corpses of deer, and I remembered the hunter's sons, my schoolmates, bragging how their daddies had exceeded the limit and hadn't gotten caught. I remembered two boys from high school, now green berets, returned from Asia, reminiscing about search and destroy missions, and cutting my horrified objections with, if you weren't there, you can't understand. The VCs don't suffer as you would suffer. Do not speak about what you do not know. There are no real parallels. I am not being fair. And who am I to be so righteous? I, who have struck another, human as myself, in anger. I, who eat the flesh of animals, but not the flesh of sharks. No, no one dines on baby sharks. And this infant monster's death by suffocation, its grasping for breath in a sea of oxygen, fed no fellow creature. My heart, mindful of its own ability to break and breathe and to break and bleed, cries, murderer, wastrel. How can you kill what you will not eat? What other excuse can there be for death?
Humpback large and small, there was room enough for all, till there came the rule of man. Now the gentle whale is dog meat in the can. The whale for millions used to be their rightful population in the sea. Few thousands now remain, and we harry them again as the whale goes and the dolphin and the ocean forest, so will we.
There's a whole lot of Freudian terms, which I really like. I don't know. I don't think I'm going to make a political stance to say we should claim them. I just like it, like polymorphous perversity. I like those words. And another one I like is narcissism. So this poem is called Narcissism. I want to give birth to myself. I want to be suckled by myself. I want to live my life for myself. I'm thinking I should have another series called I Want Poems.
Yeah, really.
Another I Want.
I Want Number 1,000.
Right. Okay, I Want Number 1,000. I want to snuggle into your arms, into your cunt, into your life. I want to nuzzle against your breasts, against your thoughts, against your life. I want to learn to be the lover, to be the friend, the sister you need. I want you to touch my secret places, want to open up, let you into my life. This is another series called Junkie Blues. I can't give you up, can't detoxify, although I now believe that we are bad for one another. But I live for the fix of nipple to mouth, fingers to cunt, the flooding, the high, the peace I always find in your arms. You'd think that after all this time it would be too familiar to have this compulsion for me. But no, every time I get high, get off, get behind the sensation of body to body, desire to desire, soul locked to soul. The rush gets me off every time, and I crave the fix, and I need my connection, and you are my source, this pusher of love. These are poems for my mother. This one's called Family Resemblances. It frightens me how much my mother is like her mother. It's terrifying, especially to see in my mother the traits of my grandmother, which my mother despises. And of course, my mother sees no such similarity. I, having no daughter of my own to speak the unspeakable criticism as daughters do, will never know which of the obnoxious habits of my mother's lives in me. No female child says to me, "Mother, don't do that. Mother, you're embarrassing me. Mother, you're just like Grandma. Mother, stop it. Mother, leave me alone." My
Mama,
mother...
Mama, what do you see when you look at my life, when you look at me? Can you hear what I'm trying to say? Or can you just gaze in that blind, loving way?
Mama,
child's learning to grow. Are you aware that my woman friends are filling my life with beginnings and ends? Oh, mama, mama. Well, do you understand why I'm not bound myself to a man? Is something buried in your old widow's mind that blesses my choice of our own kind? Oh, mama, mama. Well, I know you know, but you couldn't survive if I told you so. But I understand the bound that you set. I'll talk of the car and the cat at the vet. But maybe once a year when I'm a little tight, fresh regrets and write some cryptic thank yous for giving me the space to find such savory unspecific things as my strength, my freedom, and my life.
My mother wants for me to be a good girl. She wants me to put on my polite face and act like I'm having fun. All the relatives are here, in fact. It's me they've come to see. Me, the prodigal daughter who does not produce spouse and children to be assessed by the extended family. They've come to see what manner of creature I've turned into. But lo, I do not exhibit myself. I do not pirouette and invent a life they can comprehend, as my mother would have me do. Instead, I retire to my room, plead a headache, refuse the protracted martyrdom that is expected of me, for the sake of appearances. I spare the agony and spoil the game. Mother, this is the difference between us. Unlike you, I put myself first. Unlike you, I am relentlessly selfish. Unlike you, I am a survivor.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time, so we'll hear the poetry of Marion Cohen next week. Before closing, there's some announcements. Tonight at the Bicentennial Women's Center at 8 o'clock, there's another poetry reading. It's a $1 donation, and the three poets are Joe Beckenheimer, Cynthia Sadler, and Kathy White. Also, there's an ongoing group art show. It's kind of a mixed media presentation of Philadelphia Women Artists, this also at the Bicentennial Women's Center. Goodbye for Women's Consciousness Raising Hour.